Recorded Books Incorporated presents an unabridged recording of The Fallen Man by Tony Hillerman, narrated by George Guidel.
Chapter 1. From where Bill Buchanan sat, with his back resting against the rough breccia, he could see the side of Whiteside's head about 3 feet away. When John leaned back, Buchanan could see the snow-capped top of Mount Taylor looming over Grants, New Mexico, about 80 miles to the east. Now John was leaning forward, talking. "This climbing down to climb back up and climbing up so you can climb back down again," Whiteside said, "that seems like a poor way to get the job done. Maybe it's the only way to get to the summit, but I'll bet we could find a faster way down." "Relax," Buchanan said. "Be calm. We're supposed to be resting." They were perched on one of the few relatively flat outcrops of basalt in what climbers of shiprock call Rappel Gully. On the way up, it was the launching point for the final hard climb to the summit, a slightly tilted but flat surface of basalt about the size of a desktop and 1,721 feet above the prairie below. If you were going down, it was where you began a shorter but even harder, almost vertical climb to reach the slope that led you downward with a fair chance of not killing yourself. Buchanan, Whiteside, and Jim Stapp had just been to the summit. They had opened the Army surplus ammo box that held the shiprock climber's register and signed it, certifying their conquest of one of North America's hard ones. Buchanan was tired. He was thinking that he was getting too old for this. Whiteside was removing his climbing harness, laying aside the nylon belt and the assortment of pitons, jumars, etriers, and carabiners that make reaching such mountaintops possible. He did a deep knee bend, touched his toes, and stretched. Buchanan watched, uneasy. "What are you doing?" "Nothing," Whiteside said. "Actually, I'm following the instructions of that rock climber's guide you're always threatening to write. I am getting rid of all non-essential weight before making an unprotected traverse." Buchanan sat up. He played in a poker game in which Whiteside was called $2 John because of his unshakable faith that the dealer would give him the fifth heart if he needed one. Whiteside enjoyed taking risks. "Traversing what?" Buchanan asked. "I'm just going to ease over there and take a look." He pointed along the face of the cliff. "Get out there maybe 100 feet and you can see down under the overhang and into the honeycomb formations. I can't believe there's not some way to rappel right on down."
"You're looking for some way to kill yourself," Buchanan said. "If you're in such a damn hurry to get down, get yourself a parachute."
"Rappelling down is easier than up," Whiteside said. He pointed across the little basin to where Stapp was preparing to begin hauling himself up the basalt wall behind him. "I'll just be a few minutes." He began moving with gingerly care out onto the cliff face. Buchanan was on his feet. "Come on, John, that's too damn risky."
"Not really," Whiteside said. "I'm just going out far enough to see past the overhang, just to peek at what it looks like. Is it all this broken-up breccia, or is there maybe a big old finger of basalt sticking up that we could scramble right on down?"
Buchanan slid along the wall, getting closer, admiring Whiteside's technique, if not his judgment. The man was moving slowly along the cliff, body almost perfectly vertical, his toes holding his weight on perhaps an inch of sloping stone, his fingers finding the cracks, crevices, and rough spots that would help him keep his balance if the wind gusted. He was doing the traverse perfectly, beautiful to watch. Even the body was perfect for the purpose, a little smaller and slimmer than Buchanan's, just bone, sinew, and muscle, without an ounce of surplus weight, moving like an insect against the cracked basalt wall. And 1,000 feet below him, no, 1/4 mile below him, lay what Stapp liked to call the surface of the world. Buchanan looked out at it.
almost directly below, two Navajos on horseback were riding along the base of the monolith, tiny figures that put the risk of what Whiteside was doing into terrifying perspective. If he slipped, Whiteside would die, but not for a while. It would take time for a body to drop 600 feet, then to bounce from an outcrop and fall again, and bounce and fall, until it finally rested among the boulders at the bottom of this strange old volcanic core. Buchanan looked away from the riders and from the thought. It was early afternoon, but the autumn sun was far to the north, and the shadow of Ship Rock already stretched southeastward for miles across the tan prairie. Winter would soon end the climbing season. The sun was already so low that it reflected only from the very tip of Mount Taylor. 80 miles to the north, early snows had already packed the higher peaks in Colorado San Juans. Not a cloud anywhere. The sky was a deep, dry country blue. The air was cool and, a rarity at this altitude, utterly still. The silence was so absolute that Buchanan could hear the faint sibilance of Whiteside's soft rubber shoe sole as he shifted a foot along the stone. A couple of 100 feet below him, a red-tailed hawk drifted along, riding an updraft of air along the cliff face. From behind him came the click of Stapp fastening his rappelling gear. "This is why I climb," Buchanan thought, "to get so far away from Stapp's surface of the earth that I can't even hear it." But Whiteside climbs for the thrill of challenging death, and now he's out about 30 yards. It's just too damn risky. "That's far enough, John," Buchanan said. "Don't press your luck." "Two more feet to a handhold," Whiteside said. "Then I can take a look." He moved and stopped and looked down.
"There's more of that honeycomb breccia under the overhang," he said, and shifted his weight to allow a better head position. "A lot of those little erosion cavities, and it looks like some pretty good cracking where you can see the basalt." He shifted again. "And a pretty good shelf down about..."
Silence. Then Whiteside said,
"I think I see a helmet."
"What?"
"My God," Whiteside said. "There's a skull in it.